everyone. Today, Captain and I are going to be talking about games that shaped us. We do our best to avoid any particular spoilers, so without further ado, let's descend. So, let's talk about the games that shaped you.
Cool.
As a young adult and into adulthood. Does anything come to mind right away?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. There are three games.
Okay. Well, this will be good.
Three games.
Yeah. Let's do it.
Maybe four, but mostly three, because the fourth one is just kind of an extension of why the other ones were so important. The first game that I really remember playing, and I remember playing a lot of, was Wolfenstein 3D.
You've mentioned this before. Wolfenstein. Okay.
Wolfenstein is an interesting case because it's sort of the type of game that if you played it when you were growing up, it kind of grows with you. The experience definitely changes because, you know, when you're playing it and, you know, you're a lot younger, it's about the gameplay. You know, it's just like it's fun. And, you know, if you're young and you're playing like a violent game, depending on what your upbringing was like, it kind of feels like a little bit wrong and a little bit exciting that way. Because, I mean, yeah. For those that, you know, aren't familiar, you know, it's one of the, if not the pioneer first-person shooter game. It's very violent, very immersive, even for a game that came out, you know, way back then.
And for those listening, what's the premise a little bit, if you don't mind?
Sure.
Just like doing a little summary or blurb.
Sure. The basic premise of the game is you play a character named BJ Blazkowicz, who is an Allied spy during World War II, and he is escaping from basically like a Nazi prison named Castle Wolfenstein. And the game sort of takes place in this alternate history where you know, you take, you know, the general idea of World War II and you add the Nazis doing things like genetic experimentation and giant robots and just ridiculous sort of future tech placed in that moment of history. So you go through, you know, various levels murdering everything in your path basically to escape the prison. There isn't really much of a deeper story than that.
No, that's
until
that's
you
perfect.
Get to the later titles, of course, the more modern ones.
And how old were you when you played this game?
I would say probably maybe like 5 or 6-ish.
Holy cow. Wow. Okay. That's really young to be playing such a violent game.
Yes, that would be the doing of my father and not my mother. you know, my parents had sort of like split shift, and my mom worked during the day and my dad worked overnight. So dad liked to sleep during the day and mom wasn't home. So it was just like, okay, you know, here's a computer, here's a game. And we didn't even have the full game. It was just like the shareware version. So I would only be able to play like the first 6 levels and I would just play them over and over again. And I don't know what it was. It was so, every time I fired it up, I was just so incredibly immersed in what was happening, just again, because of the gameplay and because of how intense it was. And it felt like it was a way for me to challenge myself because I was never really able to get very far, but it would seem like I would have, you know, these kind of moments regularly where I would, you know, get just past the place that I kept dying before. And it was just really exciting to, you know, be able to sort of progress like that. And I think that there was definitely a part of me that sort of understood the impact of the game in general, because it was not only a very violent and a fairly controversial title, but it was also just pioneering in terms of the technology as well. And as a kid, I was always just so acutely aware of things like that, and it made it really, really exciting for me. And I also appreciate that as I got older, the experience of the game changed for me because, you know, as a kid, you know, you're dialed into the gameplay and that's kind of it. But as you get older and as you learn history, you are able to sort of put yourself into the alternate reality that the game is building, you know, the narrative itself, as shallow as it is in this title, it's still a very interesting sort of alternate history setup. I love when a game can take something real and kind of make it its own without ruining your immersion of sort of feeling like this is something that maybe could have possibly actually happened. And so as an adult, I'm able to appreciate it that way.
And how many times have you gone back to play this title in particular? Do you find your, is it like a game that you just recall fondly, and then when you boot it up, you know, the mechanics don't hold up, so you put it away? Or is it, you know, it's still excellent all the way through?
I believe it absolutely holds up. You know, the original version, which was DOS-based, I do still play from time to time. And I don't really have any issues with, you know, graphically or anything like that. That's never really something mm-hmm. that's bothered me. And mechanically, it definitely holds up as well. There's also a version that came out for the Macintosh platform, which has Ooh. By far superior graphics and sound. So I will dive in and play that one every now and then too, just for a sort of new experience, because I haven't actually played that one all the way through yet. If you remember that scene in The Nets at the beginning, yes. when she's sitting down and she's bug testing that game, that's the Mac version of Wolfenstein 3D is what she's...
No way, really? Yeah. I know you love that movie, so that's super cool. Yeah. That you must have been really excited when you saw that.
I was.
Yeah, that's very, very cool. I just know that there are some games I remember very fondly from when I was younger.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I boot them up now, I'm acutely aware that they do not hold up, and that I only recall back on the nostalgia, I guess, of the experience rather than the actual experience. So I was just curious.
When you say it doesn't hold up, what makes a game not hold up for you?
It just doesn't feel the same.
Mm-hmm.
So there are games that do. For example, I can boot up Suikoden 2, and it's the same feelings I had when I was younger playing the game. I have the same love. I have the same feelings. It's not only nostalgia making it sweet for me. Whereas a game like Legend of Dragoon, for example, I boot that up and this game is okay. What did I see in this game?
Mm-hmm.
You know? So yeah. And I don't know. I know that there are some games that we love because we played them at a particular time in our lives where, you know, it was very meaningful to us, but we might not have the same feelings when we boot up the game as an adult. But I think the games that do hold that spot for us, that do still feel the same, are particularly special.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty cool that Wolfenstein. Now, when you went through and played the new editions, would you say that that's your favorite series? How did it feel to get a new sequel?
Oh my God. It's, as I've gotten older, it's become a lot more difficult for me to sort of marathon games, I guess. You know, I'll sit down and I'll play yeah. for like an hour or two usually, and that's been kind of my limit, at least lately, and I'm not sure if
mm-hmm.
that's just like a general disinterest or if there are other factors that play into that. That's another conversation for another day, I guess.
I don't know. I think it might be, sorry to say, I know you just said it's a conversation for another day, but I've been wondering that myself too. I remember, you know, either being in high school or younger, and I would spend all Saturday and Sunday playing a game,
yeah.
like 14 hours a day. I would mm-hmm. play a JRPG, but lately now I don't have that desire or that longing. It's been a long time since I've wanted to sit down and play through 14 hours and not notice the time, you know,
yeah.
break for air and snacks and food and drink, and then really just go get it and bring it back to my spot and then continue playing.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm wondering if that's just part of getting older or if that's games changing or what. I am curious about that myself.
I don't know. I think what has become important to me, at least, about games has changed, and that probably has a lot to do with it.
So what is important about games now for you?
Narrative.
Yeah.
And immersion.
Good story.
Yeah. 100%. I can't yeah. just play a game because it's fun mechanically. That actually takes a backseat to a story that, you know, that kind of grips me and that engages me in characters that are developed and interesting. And that doesn't necessarily mean anything that is, you know, super intense or thought provoking, which, you know, we'll get to that a little bit later when we talk about one of my other games.
Yeah.
But, you know, it just is, if something has a good pace and is engaging, that's what sells me. And so, yes, to answer your previous question, the new Wolfenstein games took this concept of Castle Wolfenstein and Wolfenstein 3D and just turned it up to 11 and gave these characters life and gave the story life on top of the fairly innovative mechanics that, that came along with that, and I'm here for that 100%.
So what was your favorite moment, I guess, narratively, when you think of Wolfenstein, even the series? It doesn't have to be the game as a kid, but did you have a moment that was, because the reason I ask is because I had something similar with Suikoden 2, where it just hit me and I went, I've never experienced anything like this in a game before.
Mm-hmm.
And I always think back to this particular moment or this particular scene. Do you have something like that with Wolfenstein?
Yeah, but I don't want to spoil it for you.
Oh, okay.
I really
okay.
want you to play it.
Fair enough. I will now, especially knowing it's your favorite series. We should deep dive about it.
Absolutely. I loved the way that, I love when a game is able to, or you know, any sort of media, I guess, is able to humanize a character that you don't feel like should or could ever actually have that happen.
Okay.
You know, when you're able to sort of separate yourself from the intensity and the hyperviolence and have them suddenly show a different side of themselves. And yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
100%. So that's the new Wolfenstein games have absolutely been able to do that. And I know there have only been two games, I guess, technically so far. But, you know, the second one did a better job of it than the first. And it's just constantly seem to be improving on itself. And there's two new ones actually coming out pretty soon.
Ooh.
That I am, I can't wait to dive back in and to get a little bit more of that. So yeah, 100%. Just the way that they're able to still keep the emotional intensity high in terms of like character development on top of this super ridiculous alternate history story that they have going on is just, it's incredible.
That's very, very cool. Okay, so what's the second game that makes you...
The second game...
You said your list of three.
Second game is BioShock.
Oh, yes. Okay, so I played the first BioShock, so we can talk about this one a lot.
Yes. So BioShock in general is just, you know, it's a very interesting setting, super immersive in terms of, you know, sound design and graphically and the environments and everything. But BioShock was really interesting for me because for a long time, I sort of had this poor relationship with games, I guess, in a sense, to where I was sort of in this mindset of, you know, if I sit down and I play a game and I'm not playing it on like the hardest difficulty, then I wasn't really playing the game and I should just stop.
Oh my.
You know, like the experience just wasn't worth it, or like I wasn't actually playing the game or actually experiencing it how I should, quote unquote. It was just some sort of weird like pressure that I put on myself that I still don't really understand why I did it, but it was a thing for a very long time. So I really just wasn't playing games at all. Or I would sit down and I would play for, you know, 20 to 30 minutes and I would just get frustrated because I'm also just like not very good at video games most of the time. And I would just quit. I'd say, this is stupid. I don't want to play it anymore. I'm done. You know, turn it off and just, you know, move on to something else. But BioShock was sort of the first game that I was able to sort of take that and kind of throw it out the window. It's I can't really say that it was anything other than chance that allowed me to do that. But yeah, I mean, just, you know, the game sort of starts off right away, just very intense. So I you know, decided to just sort of force myself to make a change. And I threw it on, I put it on easy, and it was one of the most immersive and engaging stories I've ever played through in a game. And it was very much pivotal in rekindling my love and my interest for games and sort of forming a new one based on narrative and story and not, oh, I ran around and shot people for a little bit and that was fun. So it was very much very, very important in sort of helping me learn to love games again.
And so how old were you when you played BioShock?
Normally, at least when I was playing mostly on consoles, because I played BioShock on the Xbox 360, I would buy stuff way late.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't really research anything that I bought. I'd go to GameStop and just like look at boxes and go like, this looks neat, and I just buy it.
Well, not as many games were coming out back then, so I feel like you could do that. Whereas now it's like there are a bunch of games coming out. They're all like $70 damn.
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of want to do a little bit of research before you buy it.
True. I would say I was probably maybe like 2009, 2010. So I would have been
While you math, yeah. I'm going to let people know.
I'd say like 20.
Just a little summary.
20 or 21.
20? Yeah, okay. Okay. That's neat. I think the age in which you play something too, has an effect and impact,
yeah.
On people. But for those listening unfamiliar with BioShock, it's pretty neat. It's set in the 60s, and you play as Jack, a man who crashes in the ocean on a. I think he's just riding on a plane, and he's the only survivor in this plane crash. And he finds an underwater city called Rapture.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a lot of role-playing elements to it. It's still a first-person shooter, but there's a lot of RPG elements to it. And the storyline is really morality-based. So it's super interesting and intriguing. And if you haven't played it, definitely give it a shot. We will definitely be deep diving about it at some point.
Yes, please.
So add it to your list. When you played BioShock at 20, you hadn't been really playing games that much because you were putting this strain on yourself to only play in hard mode.
Mm-hmm.
What did you immediately want to digest after playing BioShock then? Were you just hungry for more games like BioShock?
Yeah, absolutely. I could tell you the game that I played immediately after that.
Well, then tell me.
The Medal of Honor reboot.
Okay. So still sticking with the like shooter-ish type games, mm-hmm. but looking for stories inside the shooter games.
Yeah, I would say okay. my roots are definitely in first-person shooters because, you know, between
yeah.
Wolfenstein 3D and you know, all the rest, I was also playing things like Quake and Doom.
Yeah.
You know, games like that were really the titles that I dialed into at a very young age. So, yeah, I've always very much been rooted in the first-person shooter.
I started out with, I'd say, you know, platformers and other games. Like, I played The Lion King on Genesis, and then Sonic CD. I remember playing that, Echo the Dolphin. Mm-hmm. And when I became a young adult is when I really dove into anything with a stronger narrative. But those were usually traditional JRPGs because I wasn't allowed to play first-person shooters. And technically, I wasn't really allowed to play JRPGs that had strong magic in them or anything like that.
Yep.
So I had to kind of like, I had to hide that fact in a lot of the JRPGs that I picked out. Like Final Fantasy was sort of off the list because it of the title alone and the fact that it had mages and stuff in it. So I had to kind of sneak my way around that. Chrono Cross I got away with fairly easily, but you know, I played a lot of JRPGs. So for me, as an adult playing something like BioShock and realizing there's story-driven first-person shooters, I felt like I had really missed out, you know, on a whole genre because I didn't know. And then there's games like Outlast, which is, you know, it's not really a first-person shooter, but it's a first-person narrative.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't really realize that there were narrative games like Mass Effect.
Oh, yeah.
Mr. B had to strong-arm me into playing that game.
Really?
Can you believe that?
No,
yeah,
not
I
for
love
a second.
Space. I love role playing games, and he was on me for months. I'd say 3 to 4 months saying you should play this game. You should play this game. You'd really like it. It's space and it's an RPG. And I remember saying, "Oh, but I'm, you know, I'm into the JRPG thing and I'm not really sure I, you know, want to do a shooter game in yeah, and then I played it and I was like, "This is the yeah, so I don't know why I resisted so hard.
I don't really understand JRPGs. I don't get
yeah,
it.
Okay.
Like,
what don't you get?
How can I?
Just
say this
do it. It's fine.
Like,
I won't be offended.
Crucified
I won't be
on
offended.
Twitter. I probably
oh,
shouldn't say
no
that
one
either.
Will crucify you.
It's just it's like I don't think I have ever been able to be immersed in like a classic JRPG. To me, they are just they're very slow.
Yes, they are.
Graphically speaking, you know, it's I have trouble with, especially like with the top down like isometric sort of thing. I know that sounds really weird, but I cannot play a game like that and be able to dial myself into the narrative. It just totally removes me. So like I
That's
don't know, just saying that you were avoiding something like Mass Effect to me is just like totally off the wall because
it's made for me.
It's
yeah.
like this is, I don't know, maybe this is a weird thing to say, but I feel like it's objectively more immersive than your standard JRPG because of the way that it's technically executed. And I know that, you know, as time went on, you know, JRPGs don't look the same. They don't look like a Super Nintendo game anymore. You know what I mean? Like, I get that.
Right. Yeah.
But even so, it's just the, I've always had trouble with titles that, I guess, for lack of a better term, don't spoon feed it to you a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, I've never really been able to suspend my sense of disbelief for something that doesn't feel like it has a plot that comes from anywhere. Like a lot of JRPGs that I've played, you know, it's just like it starts you off and, oh, there's this evil person that's evil for, you know, who knows why. And there are magic crystals, and you know, it's just like what, like where does all this come from? Like, I don't understand. But then you take something like Mass Effect, which is like, this is the evolution of humanity, and you know, we've encountered other races, and this is how we're interacting with each other, and it's plausible and it makes sense. That's why, like, I would say the only JRPG that I could really think of that I loved was Final Fantasy VII, because Final Fantasy VII is very much rooted in reality. There is still very much that fantastical element, obviously, but the environment and just sort of the setup of it all, where it sets you up with this character that is sort of having his own internal identity struggle, as opposed to setting it up at like something like Final Fantasy IV, which is another game that for some reason I love, even though it literally just checks all the boxes that I said of games that I don't really like. But again, it sort of started out the same way. It's just, it starts you off getting to know the character that you play and the people that surround him, and sort of introducing this personal development struggle that they have, as opposed to solely relying on the magic and the fantastical element to sort of rope you. And I've never been able to be engaged by a game that relies on that to hook you, which is what I find most classic JRPGs were set out to do.
So I think there's a couple of things just interesting to note. I'm not suggesting it might be the reason, but I think it's interesting that you grew up playing first-person shooters, so for you to be playing a non-first-person game, I think that it's harder for you to get into a story because of that, whereas I grew up playing games like Echo or The Lion King, and so I would, you know, get attached already to something I could see, that third-person top-down view. And the first JRPG I ever played, I think I was about 10 or 11. So I was a bit older when I played my first JRPG,
okay. And
it was Final Fantasy VII, and I had never played anything like that before. And I sat down with my dad and my sister. We didn't really know how the game would function. So we each picked a character that we thought we were going to be able to play, because we had no idea how this would work. And so we renamed each character after ourselves. And then we realized very quickly and early on that, oh no, this is a story about, you know, other people and other characters. So we restarted the game, you know, let the characters be the characters that, and I just sat down and watched, and we would take turns, you know, which day who was going to be manning the controller. And it was actually the PC version of Final Fantasy VII that I played first.
The PC version was so good.
It was so good. And the music and the story, and you're absolutely right, watching this struggle with identity, and that it changed everything for me. Because before that, I had only played games with maybe, you know, light story, but, you know, things like the platformers and whatnot. And yeah, I got hooked, and I got hooked real bad. And then Final Fantasy VIII came out in the next year.
Yeah.
And right at the same time, Chrono Cross came out, and I got both of those games at the same time and played them. And then we got Suikoden 2 for Christmas that year. So that year of, you know, we played Final Fantasy VII on the PC at my dad's, but so my parents split really. That's, you know, we left Japan, and that's when they split.
Mm-hmm.
So we would spend, you know, half the year with my dad and then the other half with my mom. And it was my mom's house where, you know, we didn't have the PlayStation, and I had a little bit more restriction on, you know, magic-y things and whatnot.
Right.
And so we played seven on my dad's computer. And then when I came back, I really wanted to play eight. So I had to, you know, convince my mom into renting a PlayStation so that I could play these games. But that December, because they came out, I think, in the fall, if I'm not mistaken, but that Thanksgiving Christmas period was crazy for me, because I just digested so many RPGs for the story. And I think that those three that I chose in that time period were all incredibly strong in the music and the characters, and they put you right into the story immediately, right away. There's no kind of, oh, we're just wandering around. There's a lot of side quests that exist, but they don't really start until a good chunk of the way through. So I was able to kind of just, I guess, become immersed in the idea of being able to play into an entire world. It was massive escapism for me, which I don't think you typically find in a first person shooter. You're there and then you disconnect, and then you even in Mass Effect, like, I enjoy the world of Mass Effect, but I never really felt lost in the world of Mass Effect the way I do or did in Final Fantasy VIII's world. I could wander around that world map and go fight a T-Rex if I wanted, or, you know, just go and do anything. And there were a whole bunch of side quests. So for me, coming back from Japan and trying to assimilate and, you know, become part of this new culture that I didn't know anything about. And it was a really traumatic time in my life. So being able to have a game that was like, this is going to be 120 hours of just wherever you want to go and whatever you want to do, yeah. I could just sink right into that. And I really latched onto that. Whereas as an adult now, I don't really feel like I need to lose myself into a million side quests. Just give me a main cool story. I'll follow that story through and I'm good. You know, I don't need a million side quests and things like that. So that was a really roundabout way to answer that question. I don't know if I have an actual answer, but that's the best I got, I think.
No, I love that.
To why I dove into the RPGs so hard, but
and I love that the game that did that for you, you know, being Final Fantasy VII, was the game that did that for a majority of the Western world at the same time.
Yep.
I find that super interesting, because Final Fantasy VII was absolutely pivotal in solidifying the JRPG as something that an American audience could love.
Yeah. I think it's really funny, though, that wouldn't, Final Fantasy, even though it was so pivotal for me in that moment, it wouldn't be one of my top three if I had to pick three.
Gasp.
It would be, I know, isn't that crazy? I would pick eight over that.
Ew.
But it might be, oh, don't you dare. But it,
sorry, you said eight because, and I fell asleep. What were you talking about?
Yeah. Oh, God. It might be because eight was the first one I played by myself. Like, I played all the way through eight. I booted it up. I remember seeing the trailer for that coming out and getting really excited because the animation was so much better. And I really enjoyed the idea of a gunblade. You know, that was super intriguing to me. And there were a lot of characters I didn't really enjoy in Final Fantasy VII. Like, I enjoyed the story and the main thing, but a lot of the side characters I didn't really enjoy. Whereas at eight, I feel like I was primed and ready and excited. And I just fell into that world. I loved like almost every character. So that maybe had a difference. Yeah. Eight, I would definitely put, and Suikoden 2, both of those games I would put on my, on my top most influential games as a young chillin. Anyway, what was your third game?
Third game is Bulletstorm.
Okay, I've never heard of this. Okay. What is Bulletstorm? Tell me all about it.
Bulletstorm is it's another first-person shooter developed by People Can Fly, published by Epic.
Okay, and how old were you when you played it?
I would say around the same, you know, I'd say like 21, 22.
20s?
Somewhere around there. Yep. Yeah, early 20s.
Mm-hmm.
Bulletstorm is very much like Gears of War. Are you familiar with that series at all?
Yes, I am.
Okay, yeah. So
I've never played them, but I know what they are. So.
Yes, it's very intense, very sort of hyper-violent. But the biggest difference and the easiest way to define Bulletstorm is it's like Gears of War if Gears of War was funny.
Okay.
So you're basically playing through like a comedy action sort of thing. And it has some of the most smart and witty comedic dialogue that I've ever experienced in a game. The pacing is
paradigm.
Yeah.
Sorry, I just wanted to whisper that into the audience's ear. You should play that game. It's great. We're going to deep dive about it one day.
Oh, that is a good one.
Yeah, sorry.
But yeah, it's just the execution of the story and again, being able to give me characters that I end up caring about without taking a super serious tone at the same time was just super engaging. And again, one of the few times that I was able to sit down, fire up this game and think, yeah, I'll play it for an hour or two and then just never stop.
Because I was going to ask, what is it that grabs you? But I think I sort of have an idea. But what I guess what I want to know is, what is it that keeps you? So I know that the narrative and that initial hook is something that draws you to a game, but you also got hooked on, say, Final Fantasy VII, or you enjoyed that game as well. And, you know,
I think I'm very particular about pacing, honestly. I have a very specific flavor that I appreciate. If I give you a real world example, I hate games that use backtracking as a mechanic.
Yeah, you've mentioned that before.
Drives me
okay,
crazy.
So those unfamiliar with that, let them know what you mean.
So basically,
an example.
You know, a lot of times you will be, I'm playing through Metal Gear Solid right now, and this game is sort of guilty of that as well, to where you will go through one area, complete it, go through area two, complete it, go through area three, complete it. And then once you get to area four, all of a sudden you're introduced with a requirement to go all the way back to, let's say, the first or second area of the game. And it turns into sort of a what feels like a useless fetch quest. There's no progression.
Yeah.
So what hooks me about, you know, most of these games that I've mentioned, I wouldn't say Wolfenstein 3D really falls under this because it is kind of the same thing throughout. As long as everything that I'm doing feels like I'm progressing to the next part of the story, that's what keeps me interested. Something like The Last of Us is also really good at that. You never feel you never feel like you're stagnant or that you're stalled. You know, you always feel like you are making progress, and that's really important to me. It's hard to define that, but would be the best way that I could explain it. I think
it's very interesting. Now, I don't want to talk too much about The Last of Us because I know we're going to do an episode on that, mm-hmm. but what I found really interesting about The Last of Us, and I don't know any other game that's been able to do this, is yes, I felt like I was progressing, but I felt like I was getting further and further away from myself throughout that entire game. Mm-hmm. Like, I just felt more and more isolated and more, not necessarily broken, but just changed. Not defeated either. I don't really know how to put it into words, but it's like they actually took me along a journey of what it would feel like to just slowly realize that life is forever fundamentally different now. And I just have to get used to the way it's going to be.
And there's this one moment in the game, and because I've been going through and I've been editing your best of 2018, and you know, you played that game this year, and there's just this one clip that's playing in my head right now from you playing that game that I wish we could talk about because it so perfectly defines everything that you just said.
Let's talk about it then. We can dive more. We have so much to talk about in The Last of Us. It's not like we will be missing out talking, but I want to know what you're going to say.
I wouldn't mind mentioning it, but I'll probably end up cutting it out because it's a huge spoiler.
Okay, yeah, fair, yeah.
And actually, but it's when... Which you totally don't need to do, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
You just went
to
town on that, man. And I just, it's so intense. And that moment is. So totally defines what you just said perfectly, I feel like. Because you lose all of your humanity for a second. And it's just like, oh, man.
It's things are different now. This is how things are going to be now from now on. So I'm just going to roll with it.
Yep.
Let's go back and talk about Bulletstorm a little bit. So you're saying it's Gears of War if it were a comedy.
Mm-hmm.
So what other reasons is it on your top three list? How else did it shape you?
Well,
you played it after BioShock, right?
Yes, I did. Mm-hmm. I mean, I almost hate to say it, but it's not really any deeper than that. Like, it's just,
it was just a really neat experience.
Yeah, it was sort of like if I had to sit and, you know, write like a steps to help Chris love games again. It was like I had the dark and intense fantasy, which was BioShock. I had the dark and intense real life story, which was Medal of Honor.
Yeah.
And then I was given this total change of pace, this funny, lighthearted, ultra ridiculous, just a good time, you know. And it's important to have that balance, especially if you play a lot of video games, which I know there are a lot of, you know, streamers that that listen to this, and I feel like when it's sort of a part-time job, at least for you to sit here and play video games, it's important to find that balance. You don't want to sit here and play one super dark, intense, feelsy experience after the other, because you're gonna break yourself,
right.
You know?
Yeah, you're gonna burn out.
And that's sort of what Bulletstorm was for me. It was just like that magical finding that balance that just really allowed me to sit down and say, yes, I enjoy video games again. I'm finding these incredible stories, and I'm able to be a part of it as opposed to just watching it. This exists. This is a thing. And it's just, it becomes just something that, you know, in a way, you can't really live without, I guess. You know, having these escapes and then being able to participate in these narratives is just, it's the most incredible thing. And so Bulletstorm was the one that was able to sort of show me a different side of things, and that it doesn't always have to be dreary and depressing. I'd say the only other game that might have contributed to that was Bully. I played that on PlayStation 2. However,
oh, I've heard so much about that game, but I never played it.
I haven't finished it, so, you know, I wouldn't really feel right sitting here talking about it for an extended period of time. But
Mr. B loves it.
It's a good one. It's a good one for sure.
I think what intrigues me so much about the way you just described games, or at least games like this, the narrative ones, is that it's, you know, I watch movies for a good story, mm-hmm. but I don't ever feel like I am in the story. I am watching what somebody has decided to tell me. I am watching it expertly crafted, keeping in mind lighting, you know, colors, tones, things like that, to kind of like paint mm-hmm. the scene and tell the story. It's just one big polished piece of art. And games are definitely art as well. But I feel like a video game is like a perfect merger between a movie and a book for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel more immersed playing a game than I do, you know, necessarily reading a book. I feel like an observer with a movie and a book.
Mm.
Whereas in a game, even though it's someone else's story and I might not be naming that character after myself, I usually go with the default name because I want it to see their story. I still somehow feel so much more invested, and it might just be because of that controller, but I think there's more to it than that. I think it's, you know, the decisions that you sometimes have to make. It's, you know, you being behind the controls, but it's also just the way games are presented, that I'm sitting there at my computer and all of a sudden I'm just somewhere else.
Yeah.
I'm just there, or, you know, something really great about that.
Absolutely.
It's addictive for sure.
I would agree with that. I'd say there's only really been a couple of movies that have pulled me in the same way. Yeah, yeah. Not to discount the experience at all, because, you know, it's still a fantastic experience, but I wouldn't say anything
yeah.
rivals pushing that button and making those choices yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Well, thanks, Cap.
Thank you. This was fun.
Yeah, this was really cool. We'll have to do another episode where I tell you all about mine.
Yes, please.
And I think we should, I would love to make this. This is something Cap and I have been talking about making a segment for a while. We want to have some people on to talk about their favorite games that, I don't know what to call it, moved us, I guess, mm-hmm. or meant a great big deal to us as we were young adults. And I found this very, very, very interesting. So I'm going to have to add Bulletstorm to my list and Wolfenstein.
Yes, please.
Which, would you like me to play the original Wolfenstein, or would you like me to start with one of the newer ones, or
I don't feel
which
like,
one should I do?
I don't feel like playing Wolfenstein 3D is necessary, honestly. I think that,
okay.
I don't think it would affect, you know, being able to appreciate the modern titles at all, because they really don't have much to do with each other, if anything. So yeah, I would say just moving on to the modern ones is fine. Now, there is a question some could argue about playing it in release order, because there's some DLC for the first one that the way that it connects to the main story, some could argue that it would be better to play the DLC first, but I would say just playing it in release order is fine, and I think you would definitely enjoy it. It would be one of those things that I would recommend playing on an easier difficulty, just to make sure you're able to get through it in a certain amount of time, because the games are not forgiving at all, even on like normal difficulty.
Would you put it on the same level as The Last of Us? Because I played that one at a higher difficulty and I was okay. But The Last of Us was on the PlayStation.
Yeah.
So I grew up on consoles, so it was easier for me to get into and not suck at The Last of Us, whereas PC games, I've only been PC gaming for, what, a year, 2 years?
Well, I mean, it's been at least 3 years now.
Oh, yeah, because the stream.
Yeah.
That's right. So 3 years.
Let me say this. I'd say the first game, you can, I'd say do whatever you want, but Wolfenstein 2, definitely play that on an easier difficulty because it's insane how much they ramp it up. Oh my god, it's so good. I can't wait.
If you can believe it, I think I already own it on PlayStation.
Oh, do you only play on PlayStation? That's
fine. I think I have the New Order already. I don't know. I'd have to look into that, but
if you could recommend to me, and I will do the same for you, one of your games that shaped you, and I will go play it.
Yes.
And then we can talk about it. Or even something within that time frame, because there are definitely a lot of other games that I could have talked about, could have mentioned. So yeah, I want give me a game to play, peeps.
Okay, but see, the struggle for me is the first game that came to mind is a JRPG, and I don't know if you'll enjoy it or not. I think you potentially might, but I'd have to think on that. So my gut instinct was to say Suikoden 2, just because the story is so crazy.
Mm-hmm.
But there might be a game that I could recommend that's not a classic JRPG that I know you would love just as much.
Well, I mean, it's all about having some new experiences, right? It certainly is you know, an exciting proposal to sit down and play a classic
JRPG. Give it a shot.
Oh.
Give it a shot, and you don't have to do all the side quests. Just follow that main story and see what it does for you.
Okay.
And then I will play Wolfenstein. Or are you going to recommend a different one?
I mean, you should play Wolfenstein either way, because it's
either way,
fucking brilliant.
I will, yes.
Super Mario RPG.
Super Mario RPG. What do I... hold on, let me just Google this here. Super Mario RPG. Okay.
So Square Enix game came out for the SNES. I think it's...
Okay.
I'm curious as to how well you would connect with it, not necessarily being like a Mario fan, I guess. But I mean, I'm not necessarily a Mario fan, but it's just an incredible RPG. And it's definitely does a decent job of making things more accessible to people that don't love RPGs. And I would love to hear what you have to say about it as somebody who is very much rooted in that. I think that would be dope.
Heck yeah, I'll add that to my list. So you play Suikoden 2, I'll play some Super Mario RPG, and we'll recap. We'll come back.
Awesome. Sounds good.
Would you let us know where people can find you other than Deep Dive, if you'd like?
No problem. You can find me on Twitter at Capt Howdy Twitch, CAPTHOWDY Twitch. Or you can find me on Twitch where I play mostly retro PC games from the early to mid 90s, very early 2000s.
He's hilarious. Go follow him right now.
It's twitch.tv/ CapTowdy.
It's perfect. Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you, divers, for being a part of it. The Deep Dive podcast is brought to you by PBTV. And you can find us at deepdivecast.com. as well as on Twitter and Instagram at Deep Dive Cast. If you like what you hear, please consider rating and reviewing the show on iTunes. And you can also become a patron of the show by visiting us at deepdivecast.com/support. Patrons receive various perks like monthly black and white wallpaper, high quality versions of each episode, bonus episode content, and of course, the knowledge that you directly are keeping the Deep Dive afloat. See you next time, divers. The Deep Dive podcast is proudly part of the Geek Generation Network. For more podcasts about your favorite geeky things like games or your favorite shows, browse our whole library at thegeekgeneration.com.